Thank you so much for joining me today and the Doctoral Talk program.
Thanks so much for inviting me. I'm honored to be asked.
I'm so happy to have you because I think the topic we're going to discuss today, it's extremely important. And it's about dogs and little humans, so kids, and how to handle a house when you're expecting a baby or you have a kid, and how to make the transition for the dog and for the family easier. Because I think the problem that people have is often the reason why so many dogs end up in shelters.
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly in the UK and in the US, the arrival of a new baby is one of the top three or top five reasons why dogs are rehomed. So it's a huge lifestyle change for people, but it's also a huge lifestyle change for dogs. And I think people underestimate that sometimes, and they find themselves in situations that they just can't cope with, and they haven't got the energy to cope with it at that point, because what people often do is they assume everything will be fine, and then the baby comes, and then things aren't fine. But at that point, you are exhausted, you're emotionally quite vulnerable, and you haven't got the time or the energy to deal with problems with your dog at that stage. And people get scared, and dogs are then surrendered. So yeah, it's certainly one of the main reasons that dogs are surrendered. But it's preventable, and there's loads you can do, but you need a bit of forethought and a bit of preparation.
Yes, because like you said, people, if they postpone it and leave it for the last moment where they actually have the baby already, then you don't have time. You are just putting everything kind of like on the heat of the moment, and sometimes it works, but sometimes it's not going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so I often get phone calls from people who say, we're expecting a baby, we've got a dog, can you give us some advice? And the first question I'll ask is, so when is your baby due? And that's when they normally say 2 weeks or 1 week. And you're like, there's not a lot. You're very limited in what you can do in that time frame. So the time to start thinking about it is when you find out you're pregnant. So ideally, you've got 7-8 months to prepare for this, and you should be using that time. Don't wait, because when we find out we're pregnant, it's a huge change for us, and we start to do lots of preparation for the human part of the family. So you start to read books, you start to join Facebook groups for expectant parents, you start to speak to friends who had babies, you join antenatal classes, you start learning about this huge change in your life. But if there's a dog in the household or dogs, most of the time most people don't think about how it's going to impact them, and until either very late in the day, or they just assume everything will be fine. So I always say, really don't wait. Start as soon as you find out that you're expecting a baby. Because the more it's like anything else, the more preparation you can do, then the more you're setting everybody up to succeed.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, the dog's struggling with it, the humans in the family are going to struggle with it as well. So it's better for everybody if you prepare.
Yes, and usually with humans, you inform them with the humans that live in a household that there's going to be another family member that you're expecting. Yeah. And with dogs, sometimes we don't inform them until the baby is coming from the hospital.
Yeah.
And it's last moment. So we should start what are the most important things we should do when we find out that we are pregnant and we have like 9 months to prepare our dog for this. And what would you say is the most important to do in the first place?
So I think the first thing it's important to say is this applies to every dog, every breed, every size. Don't make assumptions about how your dog will cope based on their breed or their breed characteristics. So just because you have a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel doesn't mean that you don't need to think about this, but you do need to think about it if you have a German Shepherd, for example. Everybody should be thinking about this regardless of what kind of dog they've got. So the first thing I would say is your lifestyle is going to change a lot when you have a baby, but so is your dog's. So think about what kind of things are going to change for him and how is he likely to react to that. So you need to think about your dog. You need to know your dog. Is your dog a dog that lives by a routine, that needs out at 8 o'clock in the morning and 12 o'clock lunchtime and 6 o'clock in the evening? And if those walks are delayed, is that a problem for him, or is he very flexible and he goes with the flow? You know, think about how your dog lives his life. Think about exercise, frequency of exercise. That might change a lot. Duration of exercise. Who walks the dog? Is it always the female member of the partnership? And will that change? So will the dog have to get used to somebody new walking it? Will it be walked more? It might do if you're out walking with a pram. Where does it walk? So, for example, when I've got two children, I've got two daughters, and before my first daughter was born, my dog was walked, the dog we had then, was walked mostly in fields, along the river, in woodland, off lead most of the time, when I was walking them. But once my daughter arrived and I was pushing a pram, they couldn't necessarily go to those places. So he had to walk more on lead. He had to walk beside a pram on roads and streets.
Yes, not a so field walk.
That completely changed for him. So, you know, think about things like that. Think about how do they react to equipment? Are they scared of new things? Are they quite accepting of new things? If they're anxious about new things, how are they suddenly going to react to being asked to walk beside a pram, for example? You know, there's loads of lifestyle changes that I think people just don't think about and expect the dog just to get used to overnight. And thinking in advance about what might change and how your dog's going to react to those changes is so important. And really, one that I come up against a lot, and this one that takes time to change, you can't change this overnight, it's not fair, is where the dog sleeps.
Many people,
the dog sleeps in the room with them, either maybe on their bed, maybe on the floor, and the dog's been used to doing that, maybe for its whole life. And then all of a sudden they bring a baby home from hospital and the baby's in their room or in their bed if they're co-sleeping, and the dog shouldn't be in the room with them. It's not safe to have a dog in a room with an infant, a newborn, when they're at the adults are sleeping, because there's no supervision there. So the dog shouldn't be in the bedroom, but suddenly you have a dog who's been used to sleeping with you in your room for, you know, 2, 3, however many years, and then suddenly overnight you expect the dog to settle downstairs. You know, and that's not, it's not fair, and some dogs cope with it but other dogs don't.
And it's a huge change.
It's a massive change, and you get little enough sleep when you have a newborn baby. You do not want a dog that
whining.
Is also whining and scratching at the door and barking. And, you know, that's just the last thing you need, because you haven't got the energy to deal with it at that stage. So when you find out you're pregnant, that's the time to begin to think about what might need to change in that dog's life and how you can do it, introduce it gradually and make those changes gradual and kind and controlled. And you can help the dog through the process while you've got the time and energy to do it. And also so that you're not creating potentially bad associations with, you know, my life was perfect. The dog had a lovely life. Mm. You bring home a baby and now my life's terrible.
Yeah, everything is because of the baby.
Whereas if you start making those changes in advance, you can do it, you know, we can teach the dog, okay, you can't sleep with us, but we're going to gradually move you somewhere else and make that an okay process and support the dog in that, rather than changing it overnight and expecting it to go right. And then, and then everybody's miserable. The dog's miserable.
Yeah.
The parents are miserable because they've got no sleep. You know, it's just, it's not a good situation for anyone at all. So lifestyle changes, I think, are really important. And it can be things, simple things as well. I had one client who was having real trouble because the dog had always travelled in the car on the back seat and was quite happy travelling in the car. Then they had baby seat in the back and they couldn't have the dog in the back seat, so they transferred the dog to a crate in the boot of the car, in the trunk of the car, and the dog hated it, absolutely hated it. And it hadn't even occurred to them that this might be a problem, but it was suddenly a big problem because they needed to travel a lot with the dog in the car. And again, that's just the wrong time to be starting to deal with training your dog. You don't want to be training your dog when you've got a baby.
Yes, you don't have
time. It's just too much. No, if you can get dressed some days when you have a new baby, you're doing quite well. So training your dog isn't going to be on the agenda. You know, I remember when my daughter was born, if I got to lunchtime and we were all dressed, that was a good day. So, you know, you don't want to be training your dog at that point in time.
Especially with the problem being.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really important point, actually, is, so the first thing I would say is identify lifestyle changes that were spoken about, but then you move on to thinking about the dog's existing behaviour and whether some of, and you called it a problem behaviour there, but there are some things that aren't a problem before you have a baby, or you can deal with it, it's not a big deal. And then suddenly you add a baby to the mix, and suddenly those behaviours are problematic. So it could be something like jumping up. If you don't mind your dog jumping on you, you know, it's fine. Jumping up isn't a problem when you're an adult. And if you don't mind it and they're not causing you any injuries, it's fine. Suddenly, when you become either very pregnant and you're more vulnerable, or you're carrying an infant, carrying a baby, or you're still going to have small people in the house and you've got a dog that jumps, suddenly that behaviour has gone from being something that was tolerable to something that's a problem. So it's thinking about what behaviours does your dog currently do that might be incompatible with having babies and toddlers and children in the house. And it could be things like, you know, barking, for example. You know, barking might be something you can live with when it's adults in the house, but if you've just put a baby down for a nap and you've got a dog that barks at everything going by the window, that becomes a problem. If you've got a dog that pulls on the lead,
we can live and with that.
Yeah, you can live with that when you're an adult. Can you live with it when you're an adult pushing a pram? Suddenly it's more problematic. Yeah, it just changes the picture in which you view behaviour, I think, a lot of the time when you suddenly add in a small, you know, a young baby or toddlers into young children into the mix. It just, things that you were put up with before suddenly become a problem. And it's not fair to the dog. It's not nothing's changed as far as the dog's concerned. It's just that our tolerance of those behaviours has changed. So again, we need to think about putting in the effort to identify what behaviours might not be great if you've got a kid in the house, and work to change those while we've got time. And a lot of the time they're not really major problems. It's often not, you know, it's not massive reactivity or aggression, or, you know, it's nothing glamorous. It is things like jumping up, manners around food, pulling on the lead, maybe a dog that's a bit mouthy. you know, that likes to use his mouth for things or likes to, you know, chew things in the house suddenly, you know, even things like the way the dog plays. What's their play style? Is that something that's, do you rough house with them? Do you play rough and tumble? Do you, is there lots of high energy play? Is that going to be suitable going forward? You know, it's not rocket science. It's not difficult, but people just don't tend to think about it while they've got time. They wait until it's a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think what you said at the beginning, it's like, don't take things for granted and don't make assumptions that your dog will just deal with it. Because I think people often consider dogs, they love their dogs. And they think that if they love their dogs and they will just bring another member of the family, the dog will love that member of the family. And they kind of like, say, and especially if you have some people in your environment that have kids and have dogs and their dogs are absolutely fine with a newborn, then people are, you know, more prone to make assumptions that, oh, but my friend had a kid and her dog was absolutely fine. And why my dog wouldn't be fine? Because I think also they are very emotional about this. And when it comes to a baby and a dog, and when they think that the dog must love the baby because, you know, it's a, we all love the baby, right? Why my dog wouldn't, you know, accept? They have to sense that's my baby.
Yeah. People, I think sometimes people have, we put expectations on our dogs. We want, we make assumptions about how they're going to feel about things, which are not always correct. But we also, I think, place quite a lot of expectation on them. We expect that the dog will be happy around the baby. You hear people using language like, the dog will protect the baby, and the dog will love the baby. And that we're putting quite a lot of, not that the dog knows this, but I feel, you know, people are creating expectations in their own mind about how they think the dog and the baby should interact and how the dog should feel about the baby. And I don't think it's not fair on the dog, you know, we expect the dog to do all this without, I think a lot of the time, without any input from us. The dog will just know how to behave with the baby. You can just know how to, you know, what the baby is, who the baby is, that the baby is a new member of the family, it will accept it will accept it into the pack and all this, you know.
That's another thing, that very common one.
Yeah, you know, but we don't have to do anything to make any of this happen. You know, the dog will just know.
Natural.
You know, it's like the dog doesn't understand what's going on, you know. Yeah. Like people often ask, does the dog know I'm pregnant? And, well, I can't know what a dog knows, but I think they know something. Often something's changed. They can pick up on changes in scent. And as you get bigger, as your pregnancy progresses, your balance changes, your gait changes. You're more breathless. So the dog will sense all these physical changes. I guess the dog will also scent, you know, can it scent the baby, smell the baby? Probably, I would think. The dog knows something's changing. It knows something's going on, but it doesn't know there's a baby coming, and it doesn't know it's meant to love the baby and care for the baby and protect the baby and, you know how to behave around the baby. He's an animal. He's a dog. You know, which is why it's so important for us to get it right and make sure that we're not setting anybody up to fail. We're not setting the dog up to fail by putting him in a position where his life's turned upside down and he can't cope with it. And that then maybe leads to other behavioural problems. And we're not putting, you know, children in unsafe situations. And, you know, everybody sets out with the best of intentions.
Yeah.
But I think, absolutely. You know, I think they don't always think a bit of forethought and a bit of planning would help everybody, include, you know, the dog, the parents, the baby, everybody. But I think often it's kind of a bit of an afterthought, and people wait till there's a problem instead of, they're reactive instead of being proactive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's really important for dog professionals to be raising the profile of this and saying to people, don't wait. Don't assume everything will be cool and wait till there's a problem. You know, start thinking about it months in advance and you'll just make life a lot easier.
Absolutely. You know,
for everyone.
And you mentioned safety. And I think this is another very crucial aspect of handling the situation, even if you made all the preparations before and you did everything well to prepare your dog and your family for the arrival of the baby, then we also need to remember about some safety rules, because it's not like the dog who was prepared and is okay with the presence of the baby can be left alone, right, with a kid.
No, never, ever, ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things that people need to think about safety wise. So everybody knows, don't leave the dog alone with a baby. You know, everybody knows that. But there's supervision, and then there's supervision.
Yeah.
And just being in the same room mm-hmm. with the dog and the baby isn't necessarily enough.
Yeah.
So you need to think about, you know, so you can use equipment to separate.
Mm-hmm.
So either there should always be active adult supervision, and active means mm-hmm. you're not sitting on your phone while the dog and, mm-hmm. or reading a book or watching the television or whatever. You're actively involved in supervising. And if you can't be actively supervising, then we should be separating. And that can be with the dog in a crate or the dog behind a baby gate
mm-hmm.
or even tethered. If you know, if there's no opportunity to physically separate, you can even tether the dog. You can have the baby in a playpen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't be actively supervising, there should be degrees of separation. And that's another point I think actually it's worth making, is separation is often where people start to come up against problems mm-hmm. because they say, oh, but the dog's perfectly happy on his own. He doesn't mind being on alone. And often what they mean is the dog doesn't mind being alone in the house when everybody else is not there.
Mm-hmm.
But the dog often, sometimes, some dogs have problems being separated when people are still in the house.
Oh, absolutely.
So is your dog, yeah, you know, it's different. It's different when everybody's left and they yeah. know everybody's gone and they'll just settle down. And they're quite happy with that. Yeah. But suddenly asking your dog, you know, would your dog be happy to be behind a baby gate? Maybe, you know, in the kitchen, if you're in your mm-hmm. living room with yeah. your baby, would the dog be happy to settle in another room away from you? Is the dog happy in a crate?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think actually
in the apartment or in the house, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh, exactly, when you're there, because actually a crate in a house for children, I think a crate's, you know, every dog should have a crate to go and escape to when there's kids in the house, because it's their safe spot and, you know, they're not going to be disturbed. So separation, if you can't supervise, you should be separating.
Mm-hmm.
You also need to think about, you know, as was mentioned earlier, sleeping. Where do people sleep? You know, if you're lying, it's easy when you're tired, you're a new mum, mm. you're sitting maybe on the sofa, you're feeding the baby falls asleep. It's very easy to
fall asleep
yourself because you're tired. The baby's sleeping, so you quickly have, you know, a quick snooze. But if the dog's in the room, is that safe? Mm. If you know the chances are you might fall asleep, doze off, that's not safe. You need to be thinking about separation. And that's not to say you're excluding the dog. What you're aiming for is inclusion, but distance. So mm-hmm. you could be sitting on the floor playing with your baby, with the baby lying on the floor, but the dog's at another end of the room, maybe behind a gate, if they can't stay there, or you've taught them a nice strong go to bed behavior and they can go and lie happily in their bed, on their bed, in their crate, and they're happy to be at a distance from you. Another common issue is people who've, especially people who've got smaller dogs, this is a bit of a generalisation, but often I've found that there are people who their dog has been their baby. Mm-hmm. Their dog has been their, you know, surrogate baby, and the dog's always on their lap and they carry the dog, especially, as I say, small dogs. And then all of a sudden the dog can't, the dog's used to being right here all the time with you, on you, beside you on the sofa, on your lap. And suddenly it can't be, because now you've got a baby on your lap, or you're feeding a baby, and you can't have a dog lying beside you when you're feeding a baby. It's not safe. And the dog struggles with that degree of separation. So again, just getting your dog to be used to having some distance from you and being separated, but with other people in the house, it helps. I think the other key point about safety, and it doesn't apply quite so much to the tiny baby stage, but it does as the baby starts to move and becomes a toddler.
Once
they start moving, it's a whole different ball game. But especially when they start to move, is understanding, teaching people about body language and about when dogs are saying they're uncomfortable with things. And that's crucial for safety. Most people don't have a terribly good knowledge of the initial subtle signals that dogs give out when they're uncomfortable about things. They understand what a growl means.
Yes, but, and then they panic.
Yeah, exactly. But they don't see all the more subtle behaviours that come before the growl. So in terms of safety, I would say supervision, separation, and understanding what your dog is telling you, what your dog is communicating. Because most bites don't, people will say, he just growled and there was no warning, but actually
there was plenty.
There probably was plenty. There would be lots of head turning and yawning and lip licking. Yeah, you know, but people don't pick up on these, and the dog then has nowhere else to go but to start giving more overt behaviours. Exactly. Please stop. I don't like it. And then people panic. So I think keeping kids and dogs safe, if you understand what the dog's telling you, you'll find that so much easier.
Absolutely. So like putting, because at an early stage, I assume, because I don't have kids, but at an early stage, when you have a toddler, you can't really explain to the toddler that, you are not allowed to do that and that. When the dog is, for example, in his crate, it's your responsibility to make sure that the toddler doesn't go to the dog's crate when the dog is resting.
Absolutely. I mean, we can't expect young children to, they haven't got the impulse control for one of they're children. They don't have the understanding. They don't have any concept of the consequences of their actions and what could happen. A lot of the time, they're maybe not getting the best role models from their parents, because their parents don't understand the body language, so they don't know. And you don't know what you don't know. Nobody sets out to put either their dog or their child in any kind of difficult situation. Nobody means for it to happen, but you can only work with what you know. And I think the more we can teach people about listening to their dogs and listening to what they're understanding, what their dogs are telling them, then we can keep the dogs and the kids safe. I mean, you only need to go onto Google and type in dogs and babies, or dogs and toddlers, or dogs and children, and look at the images that come up. And if you know anything, if you know anything about dog body language, the vast majority of those images are really worrying. And the dogs are very clearly, and most of them, or a lot of them, saying, I really don't like this, and I'm very uncomfortable, and I'd like it to stop. But people don't see it. And when you see the description of these pictures online, it's like, oh, look at the cute cute. Yeah, it's all cute. And, you know, or the dog's protecting the baby, or isn't this fun, or, you know, and they just don't see it.
Yeah, there was recently a video, it was called Cute also, and about the dog that was protecting a baby when the dog was kind of like not allowing a person to touch the baby. I think I even sent you this video.
Another one you mean.
Was, like, putting his paws on the, it was a newborn almost, right? The
baby. Yeah, it was tiny baby, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah,
the dog is actually protecting the baby. It was scary.
Yeah, I mean, some of these are terrifying, and to people who know a bit about canine body language, it's really clear. But to most people, they clearly aren't seeing that, and that's how bites happen.
Yeah.
When the dog is seeing, has been put in a situation that it's uncomfortable with, it's probably given a few indications. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no, it's tried to stop the behavior with more subtle signals. It's failed. The child keeps coming, or the behavior, whatever the child is doing that's worrying the dogs, keeps coming, it keeps happening, and the dog is then kind of backed into a corner, and that's when it reacts. So if we can teach parents, carers, first, we also have to teach children, but, you know, they can only understand that once they're older. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we need to start teaching parents and carers what these signals are, what these body language signals are, so that they can understand and intervene, so that when they see the head turning, the lip licking, the yawning, that's when they go in and they separate the kids and the dog, and they, you know, remove one or other of them from the environment, so that things don't escalate, nothing bad happens. Because most bites to children, but when you speak to parents about dog bites, they kind of have this picture in their head of a strange, aggressive dog running up to their child in the park. But actually, most bites come from family dogs or a friend's dog, a dog the child knows. And partly that's to do with proximity and the amount of time they spend with the dog. Also, it's because, you know, they don't understand what their own dog is telling them, and they keep pushing, they keep doing the behaviours that the dog is uncomfortable with, and the dog's, at the end of the day, the dog's a dog, it's an animal, and he'll react at some point. And if we can intervene before things get to that stage, we could save a lot of children from being bitten, and a lot of angst and upset and trauma for the children and the parents, and we could save dogs being euthanized or rehomed or surrendered, you know. And it's not to say that sometimes you feel a bit like a prophet of doom. You know, you're saying to everybody, your dog could bite your child, you know, and it's not, some people will live a long and happy life with, some dogs will live a long and happy life with the children that they live with, and they will tolerate a lot and they will never snap. But
the problem's when it actually happens.
Yeah, but just because you might get away with it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to stop it in the first place.
And I think it's also important to tell people that it's nothing personal. It's not like the dog is being vicious, or the dog is being, you know, doesn't like your kid. It's not about this. And it's okay for the dog to do those behaviors, you know, to go away from the kid. And we should respect it. And it's not like the dog has to bear everything we put on him and has to be okay with it. And we shouldn't treat it very personal that our dog is sometimes happy to be alone without a kid nearby.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really important point, actually, but not taking things personally.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I've had conversations about dogs and babies and preparing your dog for your baby, people sometimes get a little bit defensive, as if by doing all this, they kind of think there might be a problem with their dog. They're admitting that their dog might be aggressive. And you're saying it's not about that. It's, they are animals. They are, you know, every dog has a potential to be able to react and bite in a certain situation. Now, whether they will or they won't, mm-hmm. might vary depending on the circumstances, but the potential is there for every dog, every single dog. So it's not anything to be defensive or worried about, or to think that somehow you're admitting that your dog has a problem or is aggressive by kind of starting to take these steps and think about things. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it isn't personal. Your dog's a dog. And I think the other point I would make is people talk about how tolerant their dog is. Yeah. Oh, he puts up with so much from the kids. He's such a good, you know, but tolerance isn't, we shouldn't be asking them to tolerate anything.
Absolutely. You know, yes.
Well, if you think about it, tolerance isn't a hugely positive word. Mm-hmm. We tolerate things we'd really rather not, you know, we tolerate. Yeah, we tolerate going to the dentist, you know, or we
often say that, you know, my tolerance has its limits, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't tolerate it anymore.
Exactly. So to say, but people use it as a descriptor of their dog in a pot, you know, in a, oh, he's so tolerant. Yeah. And you think, actually, should that be our goal, to have tolerant dogs? Or should we have children and adults who are respectful of what the dog's comfortable with, mm-hmm. you know, and respect that some dogs will not want to play rough and tumble with kids. Some dogs will absolutely love it and will have a blast, and as long as it's supervised and managed, that's fine. But some dogs won't want that, and they might want their own space. They might prefer to be in their crate as opposed to playing with the kids. And you have to accept the dog you've got, you know, and say, well, he doesn't have to tolerate anything he doesn't want to. So I think it's a bit more about respecting who they are, mm-hmm. and their need for space and peace, mm-hmm. and not expect them to tolerate kind of unruly kids.
And I think the problem that it's often... that happens often is because often we have an image created in the media about dogs for kids, dogs, the breeds that are perfect with kids, the family breeds. And the truth is it's just another dog. It's okay, the breed may have some genetic qualities, but still we work with this individual, and this individual is a dog.
Yeah, exactly. I think when people either have a dog already and they bring a baby into the family, or they have kids and they get a puppy, most of the time, and it's understandable, we all do it, but they have this image in their head of what the perfect family dog, or how a family with a dog will be, and they picture, you know, the dog loving the kids loving the dog. Yeah, exactly. You know, they picture family walks on the beach and the dog, you know, running nicely at their side and everybody playing respectfully, and the dog coming back when it's called and not chewing anything and not jumping, being polite with the kid. You know, when the kids bring their friends over, the dog's good with every child, you know, even ones it doesn't know. And they have this kind of rose-tinted vision of what life with a family dog is and what the perfect family dog is, mm-hmm. And the perfect family dog is one that, as you say, doesn't jump up, doesn't run away, does exactly what it's told, never ever ever shows any irritation or anger or frustration or aggression, wants to be petted, wants to be touched all the time by everybody, mm-hmm. you know. And that dog doesn't really often exist.
It hasn't existed at all.
Yeah. And a lot of that stuff also doesn't come without a lot of effort on the human's part. You know, if you're going to have this perfect family dog, you have to put a lot of work into that.
A lot.
It doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, huge amounts of expectation on the dog. And I think people do hear, well, certainly here, I think I see a huge increase. So there's huge popularity of things like Labradoodles and Cockapoos, which are, and they are the dogs that I see more and more being chosen as perfect family pets, mm-hmm. because they look, and they kind of look like wee teddy bears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they're very cute and curly and mm-hmm. cuddly. And but a lot of the time, these are really super active dogs, you know, that are, have got a lot of energy, need a lot of, need that energy channeled in a positive way.
So we need to have
do
time.
You have time for
yeah.
yeah. Do you have time for that if you have either, you know, babies or children in the house? Mm-hmm. It takes a huge amount. Children take a huge amount of time. Dogs take a lot of time. You know, it's do you really have the time? If you want this perfect family dog, you're going to have to put some work in to get it. And do you really have the time for it? And I think it's, you know, it's thinking about, you know, what kind of dog really fits in with our lifestyle, and also accepting that there is no, just because you buy a, you know, golden retriever, it doesn't mean you're going to have this placid, you know, you get what you get. And although there are traits, you know, you always end up with the dog that you've got, and you've got to work with that. And it isn't always as rosy. The picture isn't always as rosy as you kind of think it might be, you know.
But it's, yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of work, as you say. And often I think people are, when they, you know, get this perfect dog and things go wrong, they get really frustrated. And because, you know, the expectations were not met, as you said. And I also think that important aspect is that if something goes wrong, it's not that it's the end of everything. And if the dog barks or if the dog growls, it's not like we need, I mean, there is only one decision to put the dog down. And it's because I think people, when the dog growls at the kid, they panic.
They do. Because it's, I mean, it's, I mean, and it's understandable because it's scary. You know, it's scary. It's all of a sudden, you know,
your perfect Labradoodle.
Yeah, your perfect family dog has shown his teeth at a child and at your child. And your instinct, your first instinct is to do everything you can to protect your child. So, of course, you're going to panic. And it's completely understandable. But I think that's, again, I mean, it's important. We obviously, safety has to be paramount at all times. But I think it is important to say to people, it's not the end of the world. It's not, you know, it's not even to say it's fixable, because it's not necessarily even something that needs to be fixed. It's just, it's behaviour that needs to be understood. And if you understand, you could probably have stopped that behaviour ever happening in the first place. So I think it's important to say to people, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean you need to get rid of the dog. What it does mean is there's maybe gaps in your knowledge, but there's professional people out there who can help you understand your dog better, understand ways to keep, you know, supervise, understand what your dog is telling you. Mm-hmm. I think also sometimes even just, so I was speaking to somebody the other day whose dog had snapped at a family member, and they were understandably really worried about it. Mm-hmm. But when we were speaking about it, one of the things that we discussed was the huge expectation we put on our dogs. So we expect them to live with us in a world that they don't often really understand, because they haven't been maybe taught. And we expect them to live with us for 12, 13, 14, 15 years. And in all that time, never show any anger, irritation, frustration, far less aggression, you know, for the entirety of their life, their whole life, they're never allowed to show any negative emotions. Now, there's days when if I get through a whole day without displaying some anger or irritation, I think I'm doing really well. But we expect our dogs never to. So in this family that I was with discussing, we talked about, is growling unacceptable behavior? Wow. And their first,
yes, and
their first,
so common.
Their first instinct was, yeah, the dog cannot growl at the children.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so if he's not going to growl, what's he going to do instead? But actually, sometimes just reframing things and talking to them, to families, and shifting the perspective just a little bit, actually makes them realise, okay, it's just behaviour, mm-hmm. and I could probably stop that if I had known then what I know now, I could stop that. So then they feel empowered and able to know that if the same set of circumstances happened in the future, they would know what to do. They would know to interrupt. They would know to remove the dog or the child. And then they calm down and they stop panicking, and you can see that they can see that there's ways that they can.
They have something to actually do. It's not like it's either my dog is gonna, you know, bite my kid, or I'm gonna put the dog down and, you know, get rid of the dog. There is something in between that you can
absolutely,
and everything will possibly work very well.
Yeah, and it's just, and I think then, you know, they relax. You can see them, the panic begin to subside a little bit. You know, and I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some dogs that just are not happy in a home with children, and that's a completely different kettle of fish. Not everything is fixable. Some dogs are just happier in a different home, and that's fine. But for lots of people, you know, a little bit of knowledge about why dogs behave the way they do, how dogs learn, body language, just a relatively small amount of information gives them the tools that they need to be able to relax and have their family dog back and know how to deal with things in the future. But unfortunately, it often takes an incident before they seek out that knowledge rather than doing it in advance. So I think the more dog professionals and the more discussion there is in the dog world about these kind of topics, the better it's going to be for everybody, because then we don't get into the situation where we're reacting to a scary event or a bite, you know.
Because usually if something like this happens, it's much harder for the adult to kind of start work again with a dog. It's like they have this kind of like they're blocked because they have in the head what have just happened if it was something really serious.
Yeah, so they lose trust in the dog, which is understandable. But again, it's the dog's only being a dog, you know. So they've lost trust in the dog. They then become kind of hypervigilant as well. And they're constantly looking for every little possible, you know, twitch or, you know, and you know, oh, is that aggression? Is that stress? Is that, you know, they're kind of overanalyzing everything. I think also a lot of the time they feel hugely guilty.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they let this happen. Mm-hmm. This happened on their watch, kind of thing. And I think that's not to be underestimated, actually. I think that guilt, mm-hmm. it can be really hard for people to get over, that, you know, that they didn't know what to do, or that they felt, you know, they let their child down or the dog down, or, you know, so, and that guilt can make people a bit kind of defensive and touchy as well, because they, you know, they don't feel good about themselves. And I think it's easy sometimes to see these videos on Facebook of, you know, oh, look at the cute dog and baby. And when you know what you're talking about, it's quite scary. But I think it's also very easy when you know what you're talking about to be really judgy and to pass judgment on these parents and pass judgment on the people filming the video. Now, and I think that's something we need to be really, really careful about doing, because nobody, no parent in the world stands there with their phone filming their dog and their baby thinking this is wrong or this is unsafe. Nobody does that. They don't, they just don't see it. They don't, you don't know what, you don't know what you don't know. And I think we need to not be judgy or judgmental or critical of people, but we need to find a way to kind of educate people in a non-preachy, non-patronising way, so that people begin to see that actually maybe standing here filming this isn't the best thing to be doing, and actually what I should be doing is separating.
But absolutely, it's better to invest the time you spend criticizing and judging and educating and doing it in a way that will actually, because if you just start criticizing, I don't think you will even get the message you want, because people will get very, you know, when you criticize them, they get very offensive and then they want to, you know, get away from you, not listen to you. So it's better for a professional to actually try to get to the person, even if what they do is really terribly wrong and you see that, it's better to kind of like make them get the connection with them, to tell them in a way that will understand.
Yeah, because nobody wants to be told that they're wrong. Nobody likes that, but people certainly don't want to be told that they're putting their children at risk, that they're a bad parent, you know, or they're a neglectful parent. You know, that's you know, getting to the heart of, you know, that's a terrible thing to say to somebody, because it's not deliberate. You know, they're not setting out to do something stupid. So it's finding ways to educate people, and finding ways to let people know that they need to be educated. That does sound a bit preachy, but you know what I mean. Because it's all very well to put the information out there, but people need to realise that this isn't just for the person with the really, really badly behaved dog down the road. This is for every dog owner. If you've got dogs and children in the mix, everybody should know this stuff.
Absolutely.
Or at least know where to begin to find it or who to ask about it. So it's not just putting the information out there. It's helping people understand that this is for everyone. And it doesn't matter if you've got a Malamute, a pit bull, a poodle, a chihuahua, and any dog in between. Is for everybody. And I think, and the more we understand our dogs and what they're telling us, the better the dogs' lives are going to be as well. You know, the more enriched and the more happy and healthy, and that's when you get a great family dog, when you've got a dog that's listened to, that's understood, that has an enriched, fulfilled, you know, happy life. All of that will feed in to creating this perfect family dog, because he's listened to and he's understood and his wishes are respected and he is given choice and control of his environment and all these things, which just all feeds into creating a happy, well-rounded dog, which is what everybody wants.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it perfectly sums up our conversation, that it's really about educating and understanding the species you have at your home before. And I think that what you said at the beginning about preparation and everything, it's super helpful. And I think there's too little information about this for future parents. And it was really a wonderful source of information to have you today.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's such an important topic, and I think everyone will benefit from more people thinking a bit more deeply about this. The dogs will benefit, parents will benefit, and kids will grow up in houses that understand dogs, and then the future generations, you know. So if we can educate adults, then in turn they can educate kids, and we can all just begin to understand the dogs that we share our lives with that little bit better.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Elaine. It was wonderful.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure. Yeah.